Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi, I'm Jenny. I'm an alcoholic. This is my home group, and my sobriety date is March 1st, 2011. And I have a sponsor, and she also has a sponsor. I think those are the things that I have been asked to share with you. So a little bit about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. I grew up around a family of alcoholics, and I swore I would never be one of them. And I had many drinking nights where I would go on and on and rant and rave about how horrible they were, and you know, how horrible of an alcoholic, you know, certain individuals were in my family, depending on, you know, who was on my list that day. Meanwhile, I'm completely wasted. And that was a lot of what my drinking looked like. The irritable and discontented I felt from, you know, a very young age. When I was 12, my parents had put me in counseling. They didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I just knew that I didn't feel right. And I like to blame it on other people. And that was just how I went on through my drinking career. And so I had my first drink when I was 14, and, you know, I didn't realize it then. This program's taught me, and working with the sponsors taught me, that I was powerless over that very first drink, even before I'd ever even had alcohol. I lived in a small town where they didn't sell alcohol. I went to great lengths to get my very first drink of alcohol, even though I'd never even had it before, but I knew I needed it. And my girlfriend and I, we had, you know, pulled together some cash. We put it in a discreet location, and some guy came and picked it up. And then the next day, he puts our two packs of wine coolers in some other discreet location. And I just thought it was hilarious. And I'd never actually drank before. That was my complete powerlessness. I needed something to take away whatever it was that I didn't know how to fix or what was wrong. And that first time I drank, I blacked out. I came to with my friends scooping vomit out of my mouth, and we thought it was hilarious, you know. And but at the same time, there was this fear, you know, and there was still this kind of like, I don't want to be like my family. And so I didn't actually drink again until I was 19, but between 14 and 19, you know, I just continued to be miserable. I actually ended up in a 72-hour psych hold for trying to OD on some pills that my doctor had been giving me for all these, you know, unknown, you know, ailments. And that was horrible. I never wanted to go back there again. So when I was 19, I moved from Northern California to Portland. I had a cousin. We were about the same age. She had a boyfriend who was over 21, and it was on at that point. Again, you know, not having drank too much, I spent a lot of time and energy on trying to decide what I was going to drink, what it was, you know, going to be mixed with, and, you know, sending him to the store with a grocery list for, you know, this alcohol that I seemed to know that it would fix me, even though I'd had, you know, very little interaction with it. And so at 19 and 20, you know, it really was just partying on the weekends. And, you know, and my friends would always say, oh, you're so much more fun, and you're so uptight. And this just relaxes you. And, oh, you know what you did last night, you know, and I'm constantly blacked out. Like, I very rarely didn't black out. And then I started drinking, more regularly throughout the week, and it became more of the way that I lived. And, you know, I would you know, drive to work and pull over on the freeway to throw up and keep going to work, you know, wearing last night's clothes, thinking nobody would know, you know, that I, you know, never went home or that, you know, I'm probably still drunk. I chose relationships that allowed me to drink the way that I wanted to drink. I got married in a complete blackout. Because I didn't want to get married at all, but I was too afraid to say, you know, to speak up. And that, again, is a big part of my story. My favorite saying in the program is, to thine own self be true, because I just didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to be true to myself. You know, it was what everybody expected of me. And so, you know, I got married and, or it's what I thought everybody expected. And, you know, that morning I woke up and I called my maid of honor and I said, you know, stop at the store and get me this, you know, this alcohol. And she's like, Jenny, it's like 8 o'clock in the morning. We're going to go get our hair, our nails, you know, your wedding's not until this evening. Like, do you really think you should be drinking like this? And my response to her is, you're my maid of honor and you'll do what I tell you to do. And so, and that was like the whole day, you know. I don't remember walking down the aisle. I don't remember, you know, saying my vows or anything. And you know that, needless to say, that marriage was over in 9 months. you know, he had an illegal addiction, and so anytime he said something about my drinking, I could say, well, at least I don't do that. And that's, you know, how the rest of my relationships were. When I just fast forward, you know, I was in. Towards the end of my drinking, like the last 3 to 4 years, I started dating someone who worked swing shift. So it was perfect because I could come home from work at 5, you know, and he wouldn't be home till 9 or later at night. And so he would have no way of knowing how much I drank. That's when I started hiding a lot of my drinking. That's when I started hiding bottles, going and recycling in other areas, you know, driving around with a bag of recycling in my trunk and dropping it off at some other, you know, grocery store or something. I remember I'd even be at my friend's house and I'd think, oh, I could probably offload some of these recycling bottles, you know, and just like put them in the recycling bin. I had a very close-knit group of friends. I still am friends with them today, to this day. There, quite a few of them, they drank like me, maybe not as bad. I used to try and think that they drink as bad as I did, but you know, before we had these weekly dinner parties, and I would always have a bottle of wine in the car extra because I was always so worried that we would run out. I would stop at the bar next to their house and I would have a few drinks before I went because, again, I didn't want anybody to know how much I was drinking. I also got a job that allowed me a lot of flexibility. And so it relied on me to be accountable, and I wasn't accountable. So I had multiple locations, so it was easy for me to say, oh, I was over there, or I was in transit, or I was going here. And so nobody would know, like, if when I rolled into work, you know, around 10:30, 11 in the morning, I could work from home. So again, I could, you know, get up really hungover, work from home. Nobody would know, go through my little ritual in the morning of, you know, the things that would get me, you know, at least be to the point where I could get out the door. And so that really escalated my drinking, that and having the ability of being alone at night where I could drink the way I wanted to drink. I had this, you know, I just think about, you know, my drinking and the insanity. I had this little like cup that was burgundy, and I thought it looked like a tea, like a votive holder, and I used to always keep my whiskey in it and keep it behind the toaster, because then I thought that people would just think that it's like a piece of decoration or something like that, and then I'd have my glass of wine on the table. You know, and I tried controlling it. I tried using shot glasses. That never worked. Every Monday I was, you know, not going to drink again. I got sober 1 month almost to the day after my 30th birthday. And, you know, I for a while had wanted to get sober, but I couldn't imagine being sober on my 30th birthday. And on my 30th birthday, I went out and bought a brand new car because I thought, well, that will keep me from drinking and driving, because that was the other thing that I love to do. And so if I buy a brand new car, I won't drink and drive again. And that lasted a couple of weeks. You know, the other thing about my drinking is I would go through periods, you know, I would drink daily, and then I would have what I call my little binges or my benders, you know. And so, you know, it's like Friday through Monday, you know, it's on. And especially if you ticked me off. There's this part in the Big Book. I opened up my Big Book this morning, and it's on page 37 right before the Jaywalker, and it talks about the drunk who, or the alcoholic who purposely gets wasted, you know, purposely, you know, gets drunk. And I was thinking about that today. Rarely did I have the intent of just having a glass or two. Rarely was it, I'm just going to, you know, be a classy lady and, you know, have a nice glass of wine with my pasta or whatever, right? And because one of the, you know, and I mentioned this early on, is that, you know, my drinking was all about other people. And it talks about in that chapter or in that paragraph, about how, you know, we're sore with other people, or we're jealous, or, you know, we have some sort of, you know, wrong. And that is actually what brought me into the program. I, you know, my relationship was going downhill fast. I was really, really angry at, him, and, I decided I'm going to get him back. And what that looked like was me getting wasted for 3 days in a blackout, not knowing where I was, what happened, and ended up in the backseat of my new car in a parking lot. And I had no idea how I got there, what happened for those 72 hours. And, that scared me. Like, that really, really scared me. And you know, I come crawling home, and you know, I'm to the point where I'm shaking so bad because I'm drinking so much on a daily basis that I have to drink. I was so afraid at that point that I couldn't stop drinking, and that, I couldn't not drink. It was actually 2 days later that I actually went to an AA meeting. I walked into a really great, group, that was really warm and welcoming, much like this one in Portland. And that is how, you know, that's how I got connected. And, you know, those women just kind of came in and they swooped me up. And, you know, I was driving out of the parking lot and I already had women calling me. And that kind of freaked me out. But at the same time, like, I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know where else to go. And I was so scared. You know, I got a sponsor in that first week, and I started working the steps. And I know that that's not everybody's story. I'm really, really grateful that that's mine. I'm really grateful that that's what it took. You know, I moved here about a year ago. Actually, it'll be a year in May 8th. And that was a lot harder than I thought it would be. So I think one of the biggest things that I've learned in sobriety, beyond, you know, working my steps and like realizing, oh, it's not all these other people, it's me. I'm the one who misbehaves and acts out. And yeah, you know, okay, maybe they might do something, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's all me that I'm responsible for. And I can't worry about what other people think or do. I can only, you know, control myself, or my actions. So moving up here, you know, I did a lot of praying, and, you know, I found out about a job up here actually through someone in the program. And, you know, I thought, hey, why not? I'll just move up here. And I thought, you know, this is going to be this big, great, glorious thing. And I'm independent and I can do this on my own and I don't need anybody. And, you know, all I've got is a plant and let's just load it up on the truck. And here I am. And that's what I did. It was a lot harder than I thought. I did not realize how much I need people. I did not realize how much I need connection. And how much I really can't do this on my own. And I was really struggling. It was about December when I actually came to this group. So from May to December of last year, I had no program. And I was, you know, likely to go out and drink again. And I had a friend call me from Portland who said, hey, I just heard this woman speak and her home group is Sunday night speakers. You need to go and check it out. And that was Sunday that she called me, and she had heard this person speak in Portland. And that's how I ended up here. And so, and now she's my sponsor. And, you know, I, it just amazes me, you know, God let me go, you know, as far as I could go and on my own. And I, you know, was close. And that little bit of willingness that was left, and that friend who's in the program who loves me and cares for me said, hey, I know that you're not doing good. I can tell over the phone, go to this meeting, this person, look for this person. And, you know, that is amazing to me how that works. And just, you know, from December to today, you know, my program's back, you know, it's alive. I started doing service work again, and you know, I'm talking in front of people. I don't know how. Oh, it says start and stop on it right there. Anyways, you know, and I have a service commitment, and you know, I'm starting to get more connected with women here, and this moving to Seattle is starting to look more like, hey, this is probably where I was supposed to be. I just didn't realize what it would look like, and I have to accept it for what it is. So thank you all for being here. Thanks.
I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really happy to be here tonight. Super grateful. I've had a very long day, and there's really no better way to end my day than with a bunch of drunks like me. So thanks for having me. A little about my story. I started drinking at a pretty young age, probably about 11 or 12. I think it's fairly safe to say that I started drinking alcoholically from the beginning. At the time, I wasn't able to identify that. I come from a family of alcoholics, so I just thought it was normal drinking, and come to find out that was not the case. Your family doesn't usually give you alcohol at 12 as a normal drinker. So, so I started drinking fairly early. And I remember the first time that I drank, I didn't get drunk, but I remember thinking, God, I just felt a little different. Like, I felt a little buzzed, and I remember just being relieved. Like, that is the overwhelming feeling that I got from it, and I remember thinking, like, I want to do this again, which is a theme that carried into all of my drinking. I drank my way through high school and through college. The biggest thing for me was that I came from a family of alcoholics, and so they had all had kids really early and, like, hadn't gone to college and were really, like, they were really bitter about the way that their lives had turned out. And for them, it couldn't possibly be attributed to their drinking and drug use. Like, it had to be all of these outside things that had happened to them. And so the big thing for me while I was growing up was, like, I want to be able to drink and use so that I can relate to my family. Like, that was something that, like, made me feel like I could connect with them. I don't think it made me an alcoholic. I just think that it was something I wanted to do because I felt that connection with them, like alcoholics speaking to another alcoholics while we're sick. But I didn't want to end up like them. And so I spent a long time telling myself that as long as I was responsible in all the things that I did in my life, I could justify any form of drinking that I did. So as I said, I drank very alcoholically. Like, I was president of everything. I was captain of everything. I got straight A's. Like, everybody at school just thought I was, like, this model citizen, but I was drinking at school all the time. Like, going to PTA meetings hammered, asking for money for, like, all of these fundraisers that we were doing, and showing up at track meets drunk, you know, like, all of these things that no one ever knew. That was what was so crazy to me. Or maybe they did know, but I'm an alcoholic, and I like to think I got away with it and that I'm really sly. So, I just had this overwhelming idea that as long as I showed up for all my responsibilities and I made my life look really good on the outside, I couldn't possibly be an alcoholic. And so I used that to justify a lot of my drinking. So college rolled around, and I started experimenting a lot more with drugs. They are a part of my story. And I found that environment really allowed me to... I was always really socially awkward. Like, even though I'm very extroverted and I make friends really easily, I always felt so uncomfortable. Like, that's something that I can just trace back to when I was a little kid. I remember eating dinner with my family and just feeling like I never belonged. And when I drank, I didn't feel that way. I didn't feel like I didn't belong. In fact, I was so unaware of myself, I just felt like I could be me, and no matter what I said, I was invincible. And so going into college, where I didn't have, like, my parents' rules, I don't know what those were, but we drank together. I don't know. That's kind of a weird thing to say. But not having my parents to, like, kind of hawk over me and to have my own life, but to still show up to all these commitments, and, like, it was just a whole new thing for me. Like, I didn't have to feel self-conscious. I could meet thousands of strangers and people that I'd never thought I would ever encounter and be totally hammered and feel completely okay with myself. And the reality was that when I stopped drinking, I didn't feel okay. In fact, I felt far from okay, and I didn't know how. I began to rely on that so much, that feeling of, like, not having to think about what was wrong with me. Like, I always felt so empty and apart from, and when I drank, I didn't have to feel that way. And so, as I said, I had all these commitments and all these great things on the outside of my life that I kept showing up for, but it didn't matter how many things I built up around me that looked really good, like the degree and the job and the, you know, the house and the everything. I had all of these things by the time I graduated and found my way up into Seattle. But, like, the reality was I kept building up my life on the outside to look so good, but I still felt so empty, and the only thing that could fill that for me was drinking and using. So it went from being a really social drunk and going out all the time to being, you know, still being very successful on the outside, but being a very, like, I went from being so social and using it to meet people and to feel okay that, like, I didn't even want to do that anymore. I didn't want to go out anymore and drink and, like, hang out with a bunch of strangers. I still felt empty from that. And it stopped being really cute. You know, like, at first it was like, oh, I got too drunk, this is what happened. But, like, I remember when I moved to Seattle, I had graduated college and I moved up here, funny enough, to work at a treatment center because I can't possibly be an alcoholic. It was really great to watch all of the people that were at the treatment. Like, I ran it, so I was, like, the manager of this treatment center, like, the operations manager. So I wasn't a counselor, but, like, it was, I remember feeling really humbled when I moved up here and watched all of these people that had a problem getting better and their lives looking better than mine did. And, like, their lives look so much better as far as, like, having internal peace, and I couldn't figure out why that was. Like, you know, here's people with, like, DUIs and DV charges, and here I am. I have, like, the perfect record, and, like, I can't go home and, like, bring myself to go and hang out with people. Like, I have to go home, drink a bottle of wine, take a Percocet, and call it good. So I remember just really confronting this idea that, like, all these other people are getting better than I am. I'm not even drinking to, like, I'm not even drinking to, like, go out and be around people anymore. This thing that used to make me feel good, like, it doesn't make me feel good in front of other people. I keep embarrassing myself now, you know, and I don't really know what to do. And so it got super dark where, like, at first, as I said, drinking helped me show up and, like, meet a lot of people and feel really good about myself. And what it turned into for me was, it just stopped me from having to, like, really feel the loneliness that I felt. And, like, every morning I woke up, I didn't want to live anymore, but I didn't want to die either. You know, I just didn't want to be. And the time I went from, I never drank at work. That was a big thing for me because that's what alcoholics did, right? And I worked at a treatment center. God, in poor taste. show up drunk at the treatment center. But I remember the time it took for me to get home and to start drinking and using just got shorter and shorter and shorter. That's what I noticed. That it went from having a glass of wine at dinner to, like, taking pills when I was getting right off the bus, you know? And it's like, it's all the same for me. It's all the same. And it just, the time I was able to spend with myself, by myself, and alone was so short because I just couldn't stand who I was. Like, I had everything on the outside. I was so pissed. I'd spent my whole life building this grand thing, you know, and I felt so far from it. And as I said, like, all of these accomplishments that I'd used to really justify my behavior, they stopped. They just stopped justifying anything, and they made me feel just as empty as drinking did. So I went to my first AA meeting after 3 or 4 months of working at this treatment center as research to see what my patients were going through. Right? Because who goes to AA meetings for fun? Apparently, I did. I convinced myself that that's what it was for because I'm very analytical. Well, if I'm going to be helping these people or, you know, helping create a better system, I might as well go and do some research around it. And it took me an entire week to walk into my first AA meeting because I'd walk up to the door and I'd see all these people on the outside and I couldn't fucking bring myself to walk into it, to just, like, the fear that I felt when I saw all of these people, like, on the outside of the door trying to, like, I don't know what it was. It was like this, it was like I was looking across the ocean, you know. I was like, I can't possibly swim over there. I'm just going to die if I go through those doors. And so I would bus to the meeting. I would stand outside and be like, yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's cool. And I would just go home. And I did that for 5 days, 6 days. And then on the seventh day, I called my mom, who is still an active alcoholic and a pretty hard person to talk to. But I can honestly say that she's kind of, what she said got me through the door. And essentially, I called her and I was like, look, I've been trying to go to this meeting for a week straight as research and I can't walk myself through the door. Like, what do I do? And she was like, just put me on speaker and walk through the door. What do you have to lose? And so, of course, I put her on speaker, walked through the door, and then I heard her talking and just hung up really quickly, you know, put the phone back in my pocket. And I went into the meeting and I listened to a bunch of people speak about outsides that didn't look like my outsides, but the way that they spoke about their drinking was exactly how I felt when I drank. It was like, I listened to people talk about, you know, what I've heard commonly referred to as the God-shaped hole, like that thing, that emptiness that I've always felt that I've never been able to fill. And they were saying things that I had never told anyone before. They were talking about all of the deep, dark things that I thought I would never relate or connect to anyone over, ever. So it was like the way that they spoke about their drinking and using that perked my ear. So because I was so hellbent on not being an alcoholic, I decided that I was going to work the steps and get a sponsor and keep going to meetings and get a home group so I could prove that AA didn't work. And so I did all of those things. I got a sponsor a couple days later. Oh, and when I went to leave the meeting, this was really important. A couple of people swooped me up and they said, hey, we're going to get coffee afterwards. And hey, we're going to make plans to go to other meetings with you. And I was like, okay, weirdos. And so I did it because I had nothing else to do. I knew that I was going to go home and be empty and feel empty. And I couldn't trust that, right? So I was like, fine, crazies. And I did. I went to meetings with them and I went the next day and I went the next day and I just kind of did it like one day at a time. And it took me a long time to say that I was an alcoholic because I really didn't want to be. But as I said, I got a sponsor and I started working steps and I kept going to meetings and I kept taking people up on the offers to like meet up at meetings and to go out and fellowship afterwards. And something happened. As I said, like, I don't know what it was. I don't know what it is even today. Like, I don't pretend to know what AA's really, like, done for me. I just know that I was given a set of instructions, very simple instructions, which was to meet with my sponsor, work the steps to the best of my ability, and to show up to meetings and never say no to another alcoholic when it comes to, like, AA stuff, obviously. But that could get me in trouble. But I had blind faith in the program, or at least I had blind faith in my own stubbornness to prove that something wouldn't work, right? And in taking all of the steps and doing all of the work and all of the things people suggested, something changed. And I don't really know what it was. Like, I still to this day don't know what it was. My spiritual experience has definitely been one of the educational variety. I came in a staunch atheist. My family comes from, like, really Mormon background, and so they were very, there was just a lot of weird arbitrary rules in place. And so the generation above me, they all defected and all started drinking and using really heavily, like in reaction to a lot of those things. And so I was really afraid of what that was, right? I was really afraid of spirituality because that's what my idea of it was. And AA used the God word a lot, and that really scared me. I was not on board with that. In fact, it took me about 9 months to be able to really be okay with using the word God. But, you know, I was pretty much told that as long as I was willing to accept that there might be something greater than myself, that things would work out for me in this program, and they did. So I've continued to do that. Like, the things that have worked, and sobriety has not been easy by any means. The first year was the most miserable year of my life. I just, like, couldn't stand the first year of being sober. I couldn't stand being me. Like, that's what it came down to. I couldn't stand being me. But AA gave me a way to come to terms with myself and to show up as a person among people and to do esteemable acts like helping other people to build my own self-esteem and be able to be a contributing person of society as opposed to somebody who just takes all the time. And that has been so invaluable to me. So yeah, I mean, sobriety, I've been sober, it'll be 3 years in July. And that's mind-blowing for me. I'm the only person in my entire family to have ever uttered the words sobriety. I went down to visit them for the first time last year, and they, like, think I'm crazy. They're like, so not a beer? Like, not a sip of this? And I'm like, no, it's days in a row. Days in a row. You know, well, you've been sober a while, though. It doesn't count if you do it once. And it's like, just blows my mind. I have no idea what it means. But instead of giving into that paradigm like I did before, you know, and just using that as an excuse to just not feel how I have to feel, like, I have the power to, like, kind of assess what's going on within me and talk to other alcoholics and be of service to those people, even if it's super uncomfortable. So I'm really, really grateful to AA. I'm really grateful to the program because it didn't just help me, like, not use. It's helped me, like, show up to be a person in the world today. And I continue to do what it says in the book and what my sponsor tells me so that I am able to show up and be helpful to other people and to not cause a lot of damage and wreckage. And I'm really grateful for that. So that's all I got. Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, I'm Sean. I'm an alcoholic. Let's see. My sobriety date is December 17th, 2010. I have two sponsors, and kind of nervous, so I just forgot both their names. That's bad. God. Fred and Don. And my home group is Full Monty Men's Meeting on Saturday mornings. So, it's been a little while since I spoke. I'll just start by saying the reason I have two sponsors is because I'm kind of stubborn, and it kind of takes a bit for me to get my butt in gear. I'm at 4.5 years right now, and I had my sixth sponsor in that time, and I don't recommend, you know, switching sponsors every half year, but that's what I ended up doing, and part of it was because I was moving around a bit. Me and the first sponsor, we do some work, and then, and he's a great guy, and very easygoing, but easygoing doesn't always work for me. So we'd do a step, and then it would be months, and I'd feel great from doing a step, but then I would just kind of rest on my laurels. And so then we'd do another step when I started feeling really kind of bad. My attitude started going downhill. Then we got to 8, and I really am not looking forward to making amends. So I decided to get another sponsor that was going to kind of hit me with the big book a little harder. So rather than dumping the other one, we still meet, and I call him now and then, you know, for advice, and we have a great time talking, and he's a good friend. And then the new one is the one I actually work with, and it's great because he's by the book, so I kind of need that. I don't want to sound like I'm woe is me, but I did probably, like a lot of us here, have a very lonely childhood. I often wondered why I couldn't remember most of my childhood. But my brother, a couple months ago, was saying, you remember how, because our parents would have lots of parties, you remember how you used to go around and finish all the half-drank drinks, you know? And plus, my dad always had a glass of scotch, and I think I was just, anytime somebody would walk away from a drink, I would just go at it. And this is probably from 2 or 3 years old up. On my sixth birthday, my godmother, she, awesome woman, but she had like 9 brothers, And on my sixth birthday, her brothers took me outside and they gave me a six-pack of Mickey's Big Mouth and a wooden Mickey Mouse yo-yo. And already at 6 years old, they popped the first beer for me and they handed it to me. And I just pounded it because I knew as soon as I stopped drinking, they were going to take the bottle away from me. So I just downed the whole thing real quick. And then, of course, they grabbed the other five and said, oh, Betts is coming, which she wasn't. But so they took the rest away from me. So I don't know if not remembering most of my childhood has anything to do with that. But again, I think any chance I had, I was drinking. But I honestly don't remember most of it. See, I forget where I'm at, so I brought a couple little Cliff's notes. Let's see. In high school, I moved from California to New Jersey. Well, let me back up just a second. So I was not only very sensitive, but that actually made me a big target in grade school and junior high. Once bullies and people that like to pick on other people notice you're sensitive, they go for it, you know. And it was pretty rough. There was lots of times my mom was working, she's a pianist and she's working on some cruise ships. So sometimes she'd be gone for a couple weeks at a time and I would not go to school a lot. As a matter of fact, that started back in first grade in California. They would send me the principal at least once a week, and I would, instead of going to the principal, just walk home. And, but in the 70s when you were six, it was okay to walk a couple miles home. I don't know. But, yeah. So, as a matter of fact, that big house was scary. I would walk home just to stay out of being in trouble. I would either stop this really nice old couple that lived down the street and tell them school was out for the day, and they'd give me cake and ice cream, and I loved them. But or if I went home, I was scared to be by myself, so I would feed the dog peanut butter so she'd stay with me. And plus, it's funny when they lick the roof of their mouth. But anyway, so yes, very sensitive school. And I was an attention getter. So I didn't care whether it was negative attention or positive. I just wanted some attention. So it ended up usually being negative because that kind of forces attention. I was in trouble a lot. I think when I was in second grade, I got in trouble for running into the classroom after recess, swinging the jump rope, going, Wonder Woman. I don't know. I thought that was cool. I loved that show. Anyway, so in high school, I moved to New Jersey, and that was awesome because people were really nice to me over there, and just because I was from another state. Drinking, I always had a job since I was 15, so I would take my whole paychecks and get somebody to buy me a bunch of beer, a paycheck's worth. And I wouldn't drink all week, but on the weekends, I would pretty much sit in my room getting drunk. So I went to rehab when I was 15 and a half, 16, somewhere in there, in 87, I want to say. That was great. It was actually really neat being sober in high school. And I would go, I was really enthusiastic. I would go speak at PTA meetings and summer camps and just got really into it. And they had a neat tradition in New Jersey that people from groups would visit other groups. And so you'd take a big, carload of people and go to cross a few towns and then you'd have guest speakers. And it was pretty neat. I got really into it. After high school in 90, 91, I stopped going to meetings when I moved back to California. It took a while to start drinking again. Once I did, though, it seemed like, when I remember it, it seemed like I could take or leave alcohol, but when I took it, I really took it, you know, like, but I wasn't drinking every day at that point. So it's been about 27 years that I got this, 4.5 years now, in and out of the program. And that was the thing. And this goes back to what I'm saying about the resting on my laurels, is every time I went back out, I was not doing the steps. And of course, as everyone usually says, I stopped going to meetings. This last time, let's see, 2008, I moved to Seattle. I just was really lonely, and I felt people weren't welcoming and friendly. And that's really on me. You know, that was kind of my excuse, and I stopped going to meetings. I just started drinking, and it's just amazing that I've been hearing for years that your disease doesn't stop, and when you start drinking again, it just picks up as if you never stopped, and it's scary how that works. When I started drinking again, I went from someone that would never drink at work or in the daytime, unless it was a holiday or something. I was a drunk with principles, right? To suddenly, you know, when I was working in restaurants, so it's easy to get the cooking whatever, the cooking sake or the cooking sherry or just the nastiest hot stuff that's been up above the stove for months. So it went downhill real quick to drinking at work. I couldn't even, I told my boss last year, because he doesn't know much about the program, but I said when I was drinking beer, or when I was drinking, I had to have a couple beers to eat some eggs. And he's like, well, you're lucky. Some people don't get eggs with their beer. Whatever. I did some really stupid stuff. I was living out on Vashon, and when I first moved there, I thought it was like this paradise. And honestly, if they had a bridge out there, I might still be tempted to live out there. But all there really is to do when you're stuck out there is drink and do other stuff. I was like jumping out of moving cars right in front of a cop that I didn't know was there. And 1/4 of July, I was like, when I got drunk, I just wanted to fight people. And that's so not me. Like, it's that total Jekyll and Hyde. On the 4th of July, this guy was kind enough to invite us onto his boat. So next thing I know, I'm kind of coming out of a blackout, and I guess I wanted to fight everybody on the boat. So I'm yelling at them, climbing, and it's obviously like, get off my boat at this point. And I'm like climbing down the ladder into the dinghy, and I just like fell, like probably about 12 feet into the dinghy, and they were laughing at me. I mean, I was being a jerk. And so, waking up in blood wasn't overly uncommon. Jail time. It's really scary where I can go when I drink. And I know that I have, my mom always told me, you know, that I have angels. Like, she, you know, in my family, we kind of believe that everyone does. But I think I've always had to have more than one. As a handful. Because I thought I was 12 foot tall and full of muscles, when I drank, someone was watching out for me. So there were so many people that could have and would have probably been within their rights to beat the heck out of me, you know, but somehow that never happened. Since I sobered up, I went to school. The first year was really rough. I I ended up in the mental ward because I tried to overdose, and my first year, I still wanted to die the whole time. But I knew I couldn't drink. Like, I didn't want to be in my own head, but I knew if I drank, it was just going to be even worse. Like, I was more afraid to live with how bad it was drinking. The anxiety, the depression, the guilt, all that wonderful stuff that goes with drinking. But I went back to school. Now I'm doing what I love. When I was in the nut house, as I fondly refer to it, and actually I wanted, when I was sober in my first year, was trying to think of some way to get back in there without drinking again. It was really comfortable. They told me what to do, when to smoke, when to go to bed, and it was kind of nice. But I didn't get any slippers while I was there, and I wanted to do the hallway shuffle in my slippers, but whatever. I got to wrap it up though. What my point was about being there was, for the first week and a half in there, I was like, I am not going back to the program. You know, I'm done with the program. And but after about a week and a half in there, we're in some kind of meeting, and it all of a sudden I got excited at the thought of getting sober again. Like, there's an opportunity. So even though I was almost 40 at that time, all the opportunities I blew during my using and drinking, I now got to fulfill any opportunities that came along, you know? So it was like, I now get to try and I have an opportunity to be the person that I always thought I was when I was drinking, you know? Because the person I thought I was when I was drinking wasn't able to come out, you know? So, thank you. I hope I wasn't rambling too bad, but thanks.
Good evening. I'm Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 5th, 2011. I have a sponsor. My sponsor and I are going through the steps. I've been through the steps before. And I'm currently on step 7, which will come into play into some of the things that I talk about. And I am of service whenever possible. And so I'm extremely grateful to be asked to be of service, to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. I'm also extremely nervous. It's really overwhelming for me. And I'll talk a little bit about that. Hopefully, I have a couple of notes just in case. My mind seems to go blank whenever I speak. I love talking about recovery. This program really has brought me a life beyond my wildest dreams. And if you get nothing more from what I say today, know that change is possible. Know that you don't have to live a life where it feels tedious and where it's marked by difficulty and where you're in the cycle of addiction, that there is something more out there, that there is something bigger. For me, one of the things, so in the nervousness and in the anxiety, I say that because it seems to help bring it out or kind of reduce that. One of the parts of that is that I have this desire for you to think a certain way about me. And that I do know is an old idea. And I have a desire for you to like me, and I have a desire for it to seem a certain way, or for my life to seem a certain way. And part of where that kind of comes into play with where I'm at in the steps, in step 7, is that's a character defect when it comes to a point where it's really high. I had several thoughts today about canceling, about like, okay, well, what if I went through all of these parts, and that, I say that because that's what happens for me. That's me on my own. That's the best I got. And that's like what my life has looked like in active addiction, is like one foot out the door, canceling, not showing up, not being able to show up. And And that's kind of how my life has gone for a long time. And what I've gotten from Alcoholics Anonymous is a life where I don't have to do that today. Like, I can show up for you. I can show up and share my experience, strength, and hope. Hopefully somebody gets something out of it. If you don't, it's short, so it's over quickly. There's that. but what I get to find out today is that I get to show up and be of service, and that I don't have to let those fears block me. Is that what I lived in when I was in my active addiction, when I was living in, with the spiritual malady without a solution, or when my solution was alcohol, is that those fears blocked me, as I had no other way to live. And that's what I lived in. I lived in a constant state of fear. One of the things that comes up to bring up is kind of that I have a caution against talking too much about kind of the characteristics or the circumstances that kind of led into the downfall of the alcoholism. And why I bring that up is that I feel like while we have a tendency to be able to connect on those areas, or a tendency to be able to see like, oh yes, that was me too, is I think it's extremely important to connect to the spiritual malady. And I think it's extremely important to be able to connect to kind of the disease at its core. What's happened for me, or what I found in working the steps and working this program, is that I have had a tendency to focus on the circumstances. As I have a tendency to focus on the circumstances of why I'm not able to stay sober, or what's going on, what's blocking me, which has all been what I've found from working the steps, is has been delusional. Has been it's helped me to see that I have an inability to differentiate the true from the false. Is that like there's all these things that I think that kind of come into play that make me that kind of like are part of what's propelling my alcoholism, or part of what's propelling me in my inability to stop drinking or inability to have a choice. And what's been extremely important for me is to get connected to that it is a disease, and that it's a spiritual malady at the base of it. Why I bring that up as well is that I have had, while I had a period of time sober, I wasn't clear on that, and went back to believing that it was those circumstances, went back to believing that it was the guy, went back to believing it was because everybody was monitoring me, went back to believing it was because of certain issues. And those beliefs are part of the old ideas and part of what led me back to drinking. And so I think at its core, it's extremely important for me to stay connected to kind of the spiritual malady and what that looks like. So to go into kind of what that looks like for me, I had a really hard time. And if nothing more, like, please know, like, I would be happy to talk to you about recovery one-on-one. It's much easier that way. I talk about recovery a lot. I work in social services, and I talk about recovery a lot with people. But talking about it on a personal level is a whole nother realm for me. And it's really hard to get through those filters sometimes. So just do the best that I can, and try to show up with that. So the spiritual malady showed up early. I was born to parents who were alcoholic. But again, that isn't what makes me alcoholic. Part of what I can remember when I look back on my childhood, and I look back on kind of growing up, is that I felt like there was always something lacking. I felt like there wasn't a sense of guidance. I felt like there was something lacking within me. I felt like there was something lacking in my ability. I felt very alone in the world. I didn't feel a high connection to other people. And I felt like I don't know. What the program and working the steps has helped me to kind of connect to is that I really didn't know these things then. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what was going on. But now I can put words to it, which is really helpful. So what was going on was something that later I did become very starkly aware of, is that the God-shaped hole, or the emptiness that I was feeling, I was very aware that, like, I didn't have something bigger than me. I was very aware that I was very alone in this world because I wasn't connected to something bigger than me. I wasn't really connected to other people, and I wasn't connected to a guidance that was going to help me. And that felt very overwhelming and very difficult, especially in my teenage years. What the way that alcohol plays into that. And so one of the things that I've been thinking about is kind of like, well, am I the only one? Like, that's not something that's unique. Like, lots of people experience that. Lots of people experience that spiritual malady or feeling alone or feeling kind of like the world is difficult. I have gone through and done some other work and in a whole other kind of area and find that, like, I'm not alone in that experience. I'm not alone in the experience of kind of having heartache or having difficulties or having trauma. I'm not alone in that part of the experience. What brings me to Alcoholics Anonymous and what has been so essential at me getting connected to, and especially lately because I kind of got stepped away from that, is that my solution is alcohol. My solution to that hole, my solution to that loneliness, my solution to not feeling connected to other people or not having guidance has been alcohol. And not everybody does that. So that's what kind of like that makes me an alcoholic, is that's the part. And when I drink, I don't have any control. And that's the other part of it, is that like that alcohol has been my solution for the emptiness, for the hole, for the difficulty, and that I don't have any way of stopping. Once I start, I don't have any way of stopping. And when I don't want to drink, when I earnestly don't want to drink, I still do. And that's what's been like heartbreaking and difficult for me. And I think that's like very, very important to be very clear on. For me, the way that showed up in kind of the teenage years was starting out drinking. Doing the kind of the tequila shots one night. It was lifeguarding and doing tequila shots with other lifeguards. I think I did like 9 or 10 and drank some beers and like got sick and passed out. And it didn't get a whole lot better than that. Over the years, it really just didn't get a whole lot better than that. And when we look at it, it continued on and it continued to go with those efforts at trying to control, trying to connect, trying to use that as a mechanism or as a tool, and it never really worked. What it did do that was effective for a time was it disconnected me from that feeling of powerlessness. It disconnected me from that feeling of uselessness. It disconnected me from that. It numbed out those feelings. And, you know, I think that one of the things that I have that I've been really blessed in is that through the years of experience and kind of the continuation of the progression of my disease is that I burn that out too. And that has been helpful in that knowing that I have gotten very clear on, like, that no longer works. It's no longer helped to serve that purpose. So I guess one of the things that comes up is that I continue to try to control my drinking. I continue to try to keep things going when it goes back to the circumstances. I did a lot of hiding my drinking with the people, with circumstances, with careers, with other things. And finally, it got to a point where there was no other way. There was nothing else that I could do. But to seek something else out. I'm extremely grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and the open meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and the attraction rather than promotion. I've been able to find people and be able to connect to people in a way that I didn't know possible. The solution that we offer here is extremely valuable. I guess one of the things that, like, kind of in looking at where I was and then what has kind of helped along the way is that I didn't have a delusion. I guess I did have a delusion that I was like other people, or I wanted to be like other people. I wanted to be like those drinkers. I tried to surround myself with people who drank and used or similar to the way that I did, so that I wouldn't be quite so apparent. I knew that I was out of hand. I knew that I was out there, but I didn't know that there was a solution. I think in coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the things that I had to really connect to was get rid of the delusion that being like you was not going to benefit me. And so while I wanted to be like other people in the drinking sense, what I kept trying to look at with the circumstances and the characteristics and other things, I kept trying to look at how, well, yes, yes, this is what's going on, but this isn't really going to be my solution. And yes, I can relate to what she says, but this isn't really going to be my solution. And so I had a lot of trying to not be like a group that I was very much a part of. And so there was a lot of efforts and a lot of attempts around that to try to not be connected. And one of the things that finally kind of came out is that I spent so much energy and so much time and so much of my life trying to control something that wasn't going to be controlled, and then trying to not be a part of a group of people that could help me. And it's amazing, like, the amount of energy and the amount of ability that I've gained back into my life by being a part of you, by being a part of the fellowship, by offering my hand out, by trying to be of service, by connecting to other people, and by not being engaged in that cycle, by not being in that circle that continues to go on. So the only way that I found that to be possible is through the steps. I've tried a lot of other ways. I've tried a lot of other avenues. And the only thing that's been possible is through the steps. That's the only thing that I've also found that's been possible for me to find out what my old ideas are that need to be set aside. Because I don't know. That inability to differentiate the true from the false, I find, has continued on into recovery. And I need you, and I need the steps in order to find that. I don't have an automatic connection to that. As we saw in my efforts today to get out of things, or to believe that I'm not going to make it through this, or I'm not going to be able to walk through that fear. So I'm extremely grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for everything that it has done for me. I know that there is so much more that's available, and I know that I am the one that usually stands in my way. And thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.